Welcome to the Buddha Sasana Podcast. This talk was given by Bhikkhu Chintita in Austin, Texas.
The Buddha once said, "Although they wish to live without hatred, harming, hostility, or malignity, and in peace, they yet live in hatred, harming one another, hostile, and malign." This is the quandary. Let me start with an example. George is driving home, enjoying the look of his neighborhood, the tidy, trim shrubbery, and the neatly mowed lawns. Except for one house, his neighbor, Bob's, whose yard looks like a jungle with a rusted-out car in the driveway. After a few weeks of tolerance, followed by a few weeks of growing ire, one day George yells at him, "Why don't you clean up your yard, you bum?" Bob says nothing, and nothing changes in the ensuing days regarding the condition of Bob's yard. A couple of weeks later, George reports Bob to the city, which issues a citation. A couple of days later, Bob accosts George with language that I cannot repeat here in this PG-rated Dharma talk. George knows he is in the right and Bob is in the wrong, for Bob is clearly not living up to the proper standards of neighborly responsibility. George previously had no idea Bob could be so unreasonable, deranged, perhaps sociopathic, in short, a jerk. So the next morning, George sets a boombox outside of his front door and gives Bob a dose of Carmina Burana at 6 in the morning, just to convince him that George has no intention of backing down from the righteousness of his cause and that Bob has no choice but to relent. The following morning, George's car doesn't seem to be running right, and he suspects Bob has tinkered with something. It goes on like this. George is trying to remember where he put the shells for his shotgun. This is a typical kind of conflict. Let's take it apart. The key concept I want to highlight here is judgment, which is not explicitly a Buddhist concept, though Buddhism teaches on all sides of judgment and in between. Judgment is mixed in with two other related factors, resentment and anger. Resentment is the initial feeling of irritation George felt at the sight of Bob's yard. He tolerated this for a time. Judgment is the "no more Mr. Nice Guy" moment. Anger is the ensuing rage. Judgment is a cognitive act. Making a judgment about someone is different than being discriminating or evaluating someone according to certain standards. A judgment is not defined by reaching a particular conclusion about someone, but by our unwillingness to entertain other possibilities or look further into what is going on with the other person. It's the end of evaluation. Being judgmental has a sense of finality about it, a sense of, "That is all I need to know about this creep." In spite of being based almost always on scant or short of rational objective evidence, this is how we know we are judging and not just evaluating. Judgment generally entails condemnation. It has the distinct sense of closing a door on someone, as if we've perfectly pinpointed all that is going on with this person and don't need to know any more. We really are convinced of this. There's generally a sense of satisfaction in closing the door, capped with ill will. Judgment is a good word for it, since it's what a judge does. The prosecutor and defense attorney evaluate The judge rules, makes a whack of guilty with his gavel, and moves on to the next case. A judgment comes with epithets like jerk or crazy, evil, unreasonable, epithets of little content since, hey, if we've stopped evaluating, why bother with details? Notice that judgment is the polar opposite of empathy, which seeks to understand what is going on with the other person in more detail. Closing the door dehumanizes the person, in that humans are very complex and judgments are simple, and yet, so we are convinced, exhaustive in pinpointing what is the matter with this jerk. It's the end of whatever empathy might have once been there. Anger is a visceral consequence of judgment. Perceived through angry eyes, the object of our judgment easily appears not only as a jerk or a schmuck or a loser, but truly as a demon, completely encapsulated as an agent of darkness whose evil mission it is to irritate us. We need no more. We hate that person. We want to hit him with a stick. The surprising thing about anger is that it creates a demon even if the object of our judgment is a close friend or family member. When this happens, we seem to completely forget about the complexity of who we used to know they are and to still dehumanize them into a simple judgment. They are a demon. Somehow we never saw it before. Anger is extremely volatile, and great anger plunges us into a hell-like state right here and now. But it also dissipates quickly, and when it does, our judgment about a close friend generally reverses itself. They morph back from the demonic form they had taken into their more amiable, though complex, human selves. Before I began Buddhist practice, I never thought of myself as judgmental. I was a nice guy. But as I developed a greater awareness of my own mind with Buddhist practice, I almost never liked what I found there. One of the problems was that I discovered that I was remorselessly and casually judgmental. I had never thought of that as a characteristic I had to worry about, but there it was. I had only to look at someone, and the judgment was set off. Ne'er-do-well nerd, misguided moron, confused cad, almost always something negative. But then it occurred to me to ask, how can I possibly know so much about this person? And the answer would come back, it's the shoes, or he talks too much. Which struck me as very weak evidence for a convincing judgment that was intended to sum them up in all the relevant ways. My judgmental mind embarrassed me, and as embarrassment shadowed my judgmental mind, both, by golly, began to fade together over months and years of practice. With the fading away of judgment, empathy began to grow. A time-honored way of expressing judgment in polite company is the tip. We go into a restaurant, and in the course of the meal, we have formed a firm judgment about our waiter, and we leave a big tip or a little tip accordingly. In the early days of my lay Buddhist practice, while I was discovering my own judgmentalness, I used to go to a lot of restaurants. Sometimes we would have a rude or unattentive waiter. In such cases, instead of zipping through resentment, judgment, and anger, I found myself wondering what was going on with him, and I would imagine the worst. Maybe he just broke up with his girlfriend, or maybe a bad investment just wiped out his fortune and he was forced to take this job just last week to make ends meet. I couldn't claim to understand more about him because I didn't usually ask. I could only recognize that there was more to learn. As a result, whenever we got a rude or unattentive waiter, I would find myself leaving a bigger tip than normal, hoping that might at least brighten up his day. This is probably a good practice for learning to control the judgmental mind. We've been talking about George and Bob's tiff. I should mention something that George is unlikely to discover about Bob, at least as long as he persists in his judgment. About a year ago, Bob became seriously ill. He couldn't work and lost his job. After that, he lost his health insurance. He has been barely able to function or to afford to pay someone to mow and trim his yard. Judgments are delusions in the Buddhist sense. Demons are not real, at least as entities out there with ontological existence. We cannot know others' intentions for sure, nor what their worldly circumstances are, unless we are Sherlock Holmes or we spend a lot of time talking with them. And yet, we are convinced that we see all of these things clearly. This is typical of delusion, one of the Buddha's main concerns. Repeatedly, we imagine the world in a mistaken way, then we become convinced that the world is really like that, then we become attached to the world we think is real, for instance, becoming enamored of the things we think are there or else fearful of them, and then we behave on the basis of layer upon layer of misinterpretation. This is why the Buddha teaches us about impermanence, suffering, and non-self. Why? Because we tend to be convinced of their opposites. He warns us that things are not as fixed or permanent as we think they are, at least when we begin Buddhist practice, that everything is actually highly contingent. Even as we try to hold on to what we attach to, it is slipping through our fingers like sand. He warns us that things are also not as satisfying as we think they are. There is a lot of suffering even when we think we are having fun. He warns us that everything we've appropriated as me or mine does not really qualify as us or ours. Judgment is part of the same problem of delusion, and replacing judgment with empathy is part of the broader program of liberating ourselves from delusion and thereby from samsara, through wisdom, through better understanding of the human condition. The consequences of the kind of conflict George and Bob are experiencing are so unproductive that it is a wonder that people ever go there, and yet they do. It would be silly if it were not so tragic. Both are trying to inflict harm on the other, somehow imagining that the other will thereby see the error of his ways. How often does someone take advice from or relent to a demon? Rather, they are both entering further and further into a hell-like state with no resolution in sight. Marshall Rosenberg, the inventor of nonviolent communication, asserts that judgment and violence are exactly the same thing, and I think that is a valuable way of looking at it. Once judgment is in place, it's just a matter of degree how far we want to carry it. A judgment is already tinged with ill will, on the verge of anger, demonization, and dehumanization. How far do we want to carry this? Sometimes we just brood inwardly, frown a lot in the presence of our demon. One of the handiest tools in our toolbox is speaking divisively, rather than attempting to confront a demon directly for his perceived errors. We speak about them surreptitiously to others, sometimes exaggerating if not making things up, thereby harming his reputation. We can also retaliate physically. This process of judgment, demonization, dehumanization, and violence also happens at the level of whole social groupings or nations, even leading to war. A war effort depends critically on divisive speech to ensure that these consequences of judgment pervade the whole society, or certainly the military forces, as they prepare for battle. Something that is quite alarming is the amount of support American culture provides for judgmental thinking. This is presumably related to the amount of violence we experience in our society. Certainly, our culture gives us a rich vocabulary to accompany our judgments, everything from jerk, dweeb, dork, to racial and ethnic slurs. I have a list I've downloaded of 497 appropriate slurs, about half of which I would not repeat online. Moreover, the virtue of judgment is a common theme in TV and movie entertainment. A common plot line involves putting up with annoying neighbors, wayward youth, gangsters, bullies, business competitors, gossips, or whatever, until a more no Mr. Nice Guy moment arrives, which turns to some form of violent, from mild to fatal, resolution of the conflict, once again demonstrating the wisdom of judgment for a wide-eyed popcorn-munching audience. The language of pundits and news commentators is full of judgmental statements or judgmental presupposition. The world is generally framed as a fight against good and evil parties. The evil parties are generally depicted as irrational or simply of malicious intent with no attempt to understand their actual motives. Sometimes we are led to assume that they only understand violence. Some years after 9/11, I was invited to participate in an interfaith group that was organized because someone had gotten a federal grant that was part of a program to prepare for the eventuality of another terrorist attack. They wanted clergy to discuss the problem of how a clergy person would offer last rites to victims of a mass terrorist attack if, under the chaotic circumstances, that person is of another faith, unknown faith, or of no faith. I was surprised that an FBI agent was on the program with a message that seemed irrelevant to the specific concerns of the clergy people. He was there to make clear to us the nature of the terrorist mind, that they had no sense of logic or reason, and that people should be afraid even to know what was going on in those minds. Here, judgment and closing the door seemed to be official FBI policy. I was a bit alarmed because it seemed to me that the FBI should be doing everything it could to understand better what the terrorists were up to, rather than suspending further evaluation. Besides, it seemed to me that the motives of terrorists are not so obscure as they might think. It was roughly the same as those angry people on our side who had escalated this single limited attack already into two wars. As it happens, George is a Buddhist, but he has not thought of any points of scripture that actually support the righteousness of his case against Bob. He pulls out his copy of Buddhist Life, Buddhist Path, and tries to find where it talks about what to do when you have a jerk for a neighbor. But instead, his gaze alights on a passage from the Dhammapada. Hatred is never appeased by hatred in this world. By kindness alone is hatred appeased. This is a law eternal. What? Well, the Buddha certainly never had a neighbor like Bob, he thinks. George then reads a passage from the Samyutta Nikaya. He practices for the welfare of both his own and the others. When, knowing that his foe is angry, he mindfully maintains his peace. George looks in vain for a jerk clause, something that makes an exception in the case of Bob. Well, this is irksome. George's plan was to force Bob to submit to his righteous will, and the world would be a better place. But all the advice the Buddha has to give seems to be about what George is doing wrong, not about Bob. George begins to wonder, what is he missing? Continued next week.
Thank you.